Good morning. With me from Massachusetts is Indigenous artist and domestic violence survivor Niyana LaFond, who has created a powerful exhibit, Portraits in Red, currently showing at the Pacific Maritime Heritage Center in Newport. She is an accomplished artist and curator, and her paintings and sculptures can be found in galleries, museums, and private collections around the world. She's the former founding chief curator for the Whitney Center for the Arts and sits on several arts organization boards, including Artist Organized Art, and is an advisor for Be the Change and the Native Youth Empowerment Foundation. As an act of remembrance and healing, LaFond created an ongoing series of more than 100 portraits she has painted of missing and murdered Indigenous people and their loved ones. She'll be talking about the project on Tuesday, March 21st at Washington State University, Vancouver. Welcome to KABU, Niyana LaFond, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
You began painting images of missing and murdered Indigenous people in 2020 during the COVID pandemic. Could you tell us about the origins of the project?
Sure. It's sort of started unwittingly, and I never thought it would become a project. All of the work I create on in any medium always goes back to processing my own trauma in some way and just trying to seek out healing through art. So this project started the same way. I was on a group on Facebook called Social Distance Powwow and quarantined like everyone else was. And I saw a post, but if I can rewind, it was May 5th of 2020, which is the Day of Remembrance for Missing and Murdered Indigenous People. So I was on the group and everyone was posting about that, about their experiences, sharing selfies, things like that. And I saw a post by a woman from Saskatchewan named Lorena Bear. And her image was just very striking from an artistic standpoint. So I reached out to her and asked, could I paint your image as my contribution for remembrance for this day? And she accepted, and I did so and shared it back to the group a few days later. And the response was so overwhelming. I had over 2,000 reactions overnight. Those were likes and comments and things. So the next day I said, well, you know, I'm still stuck at home with nothing to do. I'll paint one more, thinking that would be it, and reached out to a mother and daughter, a pair named Netahne and Yana, and they agreed, and I painted them, and the response was over 3,000. And just to give some context, now I have a TikTok video that has 1.4 million views on it. So it is snowballed in a way I never anticipated. But it was shortly after that that I said, well, I'm still bored at home, so I'll paint anyone who sends me their image. And I put one post to this day. It's still only one, which I later took down because it got a little overwhelming. But I put one post up saying, you know, I'll paint anyone who sends to me. I'll do it for free. This is just something for me to do. And in the first day, I received over 25 with stories and images. And it was in that moment that I started to see the connections between my own life experiences, that of my mother and my grandmother and so on, and all of these families. And I knew I had to paint all of them. And I even at that point, I thought, oh, this will be it. You know, it'll slow down and I'll paint as many as come in and that will be it. But it hasn't slowed down. So that's when I figured out I had to set parameters, make it a project, set rules for myself, and make it definable with a purpose.
I'm sure that as gratifying as it is to be reaching so many thousands or millions of people with your art and informing people more broadly about this issue, that it is traumatizing or difficult. So I can understand the kinds of parameters that you might set for yourself. How long do you envision this project continuing?
Well, through the whole thing, I've kind of been feeling it out and letting it inform me what it needs from me. And at this point, I've made the perhaps somewhat unwitting dedication to paint all of them, and they keep coming. So I don't know that there's an end in sight, unfortunately. I would much rather be making work about a much happier subject. It is very re-traumatizing every time, but it's also healing and it's given me a sense of purpose.
How have the families of the victims that you've painted reacted?
It's been a mixed bag of emotions, overwhelmingly positive. However, it's difficult. It's difficult to see your loved one, or in some instances, yourself, if you're a survivor, painted in this way with the red hand and the symbolism that comes with that. But several have come to me and said that they also feel like their loved one's voice is now able to be heard, or that they're able to grieve in a different way than they were before, or something like that. And that has helped me keep going, because people are saying they're getting something positive out of it.
Well, let's talk a bit about the more than 9,500 Indigenous people, mostly women, girls, Two-Spirit people, who have been reported missing nationwide last year, according to the FBI's National Crime Information Center. And the fact that Indigenous women and girls are murdered at 10 times the rate of other ethnicities, and a majority of these murders are committed by non-Native people on Native-owned land. So what are the reasons for this astonishingly and horrible high rate of murders and missing people?
Well, I wish I could say there's one reason or even two reasons, because that would make dealing with this issue easier. But there's so many different reasons. It goes back to concepts around colonization, around coming in and taking over a group of people. And when you do so, you have to go for the heart of the people. And when it's a matriarchal society, you go for the women. So this started in the very beginning. There were letters written back home from men who were here saying, oh, I keep one or two Indigenous women under my bed for my personal use. And it started then, and it's just snowballed from there through over-sexualization and fetishization, I can never say that word properly, of Indigenous women and girls, and has gone into realms related to human trafficking and the Indigenous population being targeted for that, because there is only a 6% prosecution rate on these cases. People aren't looking for these people. So it's become that we're a vulnerable population, and that's known. On top of that, there's issues related to man camps for things like extractive industries. There are issues related to intergenerational trauma and domestic abuse. When 3 out of 4 Indigenous women experience abuse from their intimate partner, that says something. So all of these things kind of weave together to create this story and this truth that is unfortunately affecting every single Indigenous family.
And from what I understand, the rates of missing and murdered Indigenous women increased with the development of these man camps in these extractive industries in both Canada and the United States. And Canada had launched a national inquiry and officially acknowledged race-based genocide against Indigenous people there. What is happening in the United States to address this violence?
Not enough. And I can say that the same for Canada. It's not enough, but at least it's being talked about now. The president declared May 5th Missing and Murdered Indigenous Peoples Day in 2021. That is definitely a lip service move, but at least it puts it into people's mouths to talk about. There are several pieces of legislation that I don't have in front of me at this moment, but there are several things on the books right now. There are people actively trying to find solutions to problems related to jurisdictional issues, but there's so many things that need to change that it can't just be one area or another. We have to kind of address it from a lot of different perspectives.
This is Lori Mercier with the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO Radio, Portland, speaking with artist Nayana LaFond, whose exhibit Portraits in Red is currently showing at the Pacific Maritime Heritage Center in Newport. Nayana, could you tell us something about the 40 portraits that are displayed at the Heritage Center in Newport?
Sure. They are 40 out of 109 I've completed so far. I sent out as many people who were from the Pacific Northwest as I had available that I had painted. So there are several people who are actively missing from Oregon and Washington and Northern California. And unfortunately, some who are no longer with us. The rest of the people are from all over Turtle Island, North America. So there's people from Canada, there's people from the US, and from people who are from reservations and cities. So it's a really diverse group. And I think it's important to show that. There's also some activists mixed in there, which I think is important. I chose to include activists in this because I feel as though these images can very quickly just turn into traumatic experiences for those viewing it. And providing the activists gives people a sense of that they can make change as well, that there are people actively working to create change. So I'm hoping that that comes through also. But the group, each piece is a real person with a real story. And whenever I'm allowed, I share those stories.
And listeners can look at your website for some examples of these portraits, which are so compelling. Could you say more about why the portraits are in white and black and the significance of the blood red handprint that is usually painted on the mouth of each portrait or each person portrayed?
Absolutely. So putting the hand over the mouth is a symbol of going to war in a lot of different tribal belief systems. The red itself is about war, but it's also about the blood of our people. It's about death. It's about the missing. The symbol of the red hand over the mouth has become the universal symbol for the missing and murdered Indigenous peoples movement. So that's the language that translates well for this. But I chose to paint them in black and white, with only red being the visible color. So some of them will have a sweater that has red on it, and that still visibly is red, and things like that. Because a lot of Indigenous people believe that spirits can only see the color red. So I paint them in this way because I want the spirit of the person who I painted to be able to see their own portrait. So it's an act of medicine or healing for me, and a relationship that I'm trying to build with each portrait.
You have embraced the label artivist as an activist artist. How is activism central to your work, and how can art help organize for social justice?
Well, I think like many activists, I fell backwards into it and didn't choose it. And so when the title was presented to me, I felt it made sense, and it was certainly a lot easier than trying to smush things together. But I think that art has a way of humanizing topics that can be very difficult to digest. I think it's important to hear the statistics and to hear the hard facts about things, but it's easy to block those out and move on with our day. It's a lot more difficult when you have to look at the face of the person that you're talking about and their eyes look back at you. That's a lot more difficult to get past. So through art making as activism or artivism, it's an attempt to humanize these topics, to tap into our emotions and our feelings related to them, to promote change.
Do you have some other artivist projects at the moment in addition to Portraits in Red?
Yes, I have a sculpture that was on display in Boston outside of Fenway Park for summer and fall of 2020, and that was about domestic abuse. I build a metal witu, which is a wigwam, and on the inside, in over 20 different languages, I wrote things that said, I believe you, your children deserve to see you happy, you're worth saving, things that I needed to hear. And then on the outside were tiles with QR codes for shelters and human rights organizations and pro bono lawyers, all the resources I didn't have. So anytime that I've given an opportunity to do something like that, I tend to angle it towards some sort of activism thing. And it's almost involuntary. It just happens that way, that I need to express that or raise awareness about it or affect some sort of change. I'm the type of person who can't be silent.
And you recognize the power of art in communicating justice. Well, I encourage listeners to see Portraits in Red, Missing and Murdered Indigenous People Painting Project on display through May 7th at the Pacific Maritime Heritage Center in Newport, Oregon. And the public is invited to hear Nayana LaFond speak about the project on Tuesday, March 21st at Washington State University, Vancouver from 3 to 4:15 p.m. in the Multimedia Classroom Building, Room 16. For Native Americans and Alaska Natives to find culturally specific resources for domestic and sexual violence, please visit strongheartshelpline.org. Thank you so much, Nayana LaFond, for joining us today, and really look forward to hearing you speak on Tuesday and to see your exhibit in Newport. Thank you.
Chimigwech, merci.
Did you hear Billy Rose ain't never been found? Went missing on the 4th of June, family hasn't heard a sound. Jim Crow met her walking, that knocked off Beach Road. Said she was meeting friends downtown, but then she never showed, and nobody knows. Hey, hey, where did she go? Hey, hey, someone has to know. We're gonna raise our voices.
고 만화되는 멋지게도 못 보게 이노 아니 사는니 가는 내니 장치원 이놈 아시게 나게 이노 담나 보겠나 나 이나치다